Maybe you're like me and you think everybody's talking about menopause, but you're still confused. Did you know that most women can only name two or three symptoms of menopause, and many of us are still being gaslit by our clinicians, offered contraceptive pills instead of hormone replacement therapy, and are too often taking our menopause advice from a celebrity? Well, this week I'm joined by Dr. Kat Brown of Winona to do a back to basics. It's stating out some key facts and how you get yourself into a position to get the best care that you can. So join us for a good, solid conversation on menopause and how you can take control of this time of your life. Hey everyone, it's Clarissa here from the Thriving Through Menopause podcast. You know, as I talk to women around the world, I know that more than ever, we're looking for holistic ways to manage our menopause and to feel empowered that we're in control of our own health and healing during this vital life transition. I sit down each week with amazing guests to talk about ideas, strategies, approaches, and opportunities to help us thrive through menopause. Episodes drop every Tuesday, so I hope that you'll join us. And I have a little request for you, that if you find value from the stories, lessons, and wisdom that we share, I'd like you to support this podcast. One way you can do that is to hop on to wherever you listen to podcasts and like and subscribe and share it so that others can hear the messages too. You might want to buy me a coffee to help me keep this podcast up and running. And I'd love you to subscribe to my newsletter, Heart of Menopause, over on Substack. Don't forget, episodes drop every Tuesday, and I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being part of this community, listening to this podcast, and I hope that you enjoy the new content that's coming up in this new season. This week's episode of Thriving Through Menopause, I'm your host, Clarissa Christensen, and we are returning this week to more conversations around how women get the best treatment, I think, as they go through perimenopause and menopause, the role of hormone therapy, and some really just broad questions that you might have. And I'm absolutely delighted to be joined today by Dr. Kat Brown. She's a board certified OBGYN based in Philadelphia. She is the medical director of Winona, which we're going to learn a bit more about, but I know is a women's health clinic that does a lot of work with bioidentical hormone therapy. Welcome to Thriving Through Menopause, Dr. Kat.
Thank you so much for having me, Clarissa. I'm happy to be here.
It's my absolute pleasure. I think a great place to start. I mean, you've obviously been working within women's health for a long time.
Yes.
You founded Winona. What was your driving force behind starting a separate clinic?
Well, so I was not actually the original founder. Winona was born from COVID time, basically. We realized that the founders of the company realized that there was an access to care issue, especially. And so they founded our telemedicine company to make access to care for menopause care for women more readily available to women across the United States. We started just in California and Texas initially, and now we're in over 33 states across the country. And so they contacted me when they were ready to move to Pennsylvania and wanted to expand there. So I became the doctor for Pennsylvania, but then now I also take care of patients in Florida and Hawaii. And we're rapidly expanding. So all of the doctors that work for Winona are trying to get, you know, more state licenses so that we can help more and more patients. But we realized that there's a gap in healthcare, especially when it comes to women's health, that often the conversation is not brought up as readily. And when women do broach the top topic and they do start talking about symptoms, many times they're dismissed just because of the lack of comfort with providers treating this, you know. And I think we're still fighting the ongoing stigma from all the negative information we got from the Women's Health Initiative study. And as a result, there's a whole generation of physicians and nurse practitioners that are afraid of prescribing hormone replacement therapy because they don't have the experience with it. I mean, I even remember in my own medical education being told, well, you're going to learn about this for your exams, but you're never going to use this.
Oh, wow.
And back then as a young, impressionable 20-something young doctor, you know, I was like, oh, okay, you know. And at the foundation of most of our careers as OBGYNs, we really focus on obstetrics very highly. And then, you know, as your career expands, you know, then you start getting to the breadth of everything else. But really the basics are starting with reproductive health. And then I think that so much focus is placed on a woman's life as far as her worth for reproduction and fertility. And then as we age, the information and the data out there just starts to kind of dwindle down. So,
yeah. And I think that's true because the scientific evidence is kind of not quite the same as it is. The amount of investment into older women isn't there.
No. I mean, pound for pound, if you look at what is being invested in, you know, this all this money and time is being put into men and erectile dysfunction around the same generation. But so we're helping, you know, generations of men be able to have intercourse, but we're not helping their female partners be able to be receptive to that when they're in midlife. So yeah, it's going back to those gender disparities in healthcare too.
Definitely. And I think we're just learning that they are just part of a continuing disparity against women in society in general. But I think now they're probably colliding, aren't they? Because we're seeing more women in the workplace who are 45, 50 and older, who are perimenopause, menopausal, whereas our mother's generation were part-time or whatever they were. Mm-hmm. And then providers, both from a workplace and a healthcare, not really being able to meet their needs.
Exactly. So, yeah. So Winona really exists for patients that don't have access. I have patients that sometimes start with us because their providers just were not willing to even talk about possibilities or treatments. And then they start treatment with us. And sometimes 6 months to a year into their treatment, they come back and they say, guess what? I went back to my GP or I went back to my OBGYN and they saw how well I'm doing on your medication that now they're willing to prescribe. And at that point, I'm like, wonderful, this is great. So, you know, not only are we helping women, but I think we're doing through that. And one by one, you know, sometimes these physicians out there are starting to see the beneficial changes women are going through when they do get treatment. Mm-hmm. And it's starting to change their hearts and minds. So in an indirect way, we're trying to educate some providers out there as well.
That's a very important part of the equation. But that obviously is something that we do want to see medical schools eventually pick up and do all around the world. But when I think about women and they come to a clinic like yours, where do they begin that journey? Obviously, I know they fill in a form on a website, but then from there, what does that kind of journey look like? What do they need to put in place to be well?
Well, so the biggest thing is women need to take an inventory of their symptoms, right? So, you know, anytime you're seeking care, whether it be on a website, on a telemedicine platform like ours, or whether you're going to an in-person appointment, you know, you might have, especially when you go to a physical doctor's office, you might only have 10 minutes with the physician. You have to come with some data, some information. So I always encourage women to think about taking a symptom diary. You know, start jotting down on your phone calendar or on a physical calendar, like how you're feeling. How often are you having hot flashes? How often are you suffering from insomnia and trouble sleeping? Like, really take inventory of all the physical changes that you're noticing in your body so that you have that information to share with a provider, because that information is so invaluable to us to kind of figure out where you are and what's going on hormonally in your body. Because we really can determine where you are in the journey just based on looking at your symptoms.
Yeah, very, very true. And I mean, how also do women then at the same time track down a lot of those mental changes that they, I think, worry a lot about and aren't sure whether they are hormonally related, stress related, or some kind of mixture of the two?
Yeah, I think it's hard to determine. But I think that, you know, more often than not, women start to experience what we consider to be brain fog, you know, an inability to focus. You know, sometimes at the peak of our careers, you know, we feel like we're great multitaskers and we're able to do so many different things. And suddenly you might find that you're not able to juggle all those things at once. It's hard to kind of stay focused. And so it is hard to recognize, you know, is it because of stress? Is it because of the changing hormonal environment? But I think that just recognizing the symptoms and being able to verbalize what your symptoms are is so very important, because that can help us to help distinguish.
Yeah, absolutely. And to recognize that this is part of perimenopause, I think brain fogs can be quite frightening for women sometimes.
Yes, yes. And I think that the other part of the dialogue that's important for women to understand is that, you know, I think years ago, we all thought like we're good until we hit 50. And then suddenly all these things are going to happen suddenly. And I don't think very many women understand that you can actually start having symptoms for up to a decade before you actually complete menopause. So for many women, for most of us in our 40s, we're going to start developing symptoms. And I think that, you know, that's under recognized, it's not talked about a lot. And I think that, you know, getting the education out there for women that, but yes, like you're going to start to see menstrual changes, you're going to start to see brain fog and insomnia issues start to creep in. And you're going to start to see these symptoms of your changing hormones as you get older. But it happens younger than we think, more often than not.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very fair point. I can speak for my own thing. I must have been about 43, but I had a lot of other things going in my life, and no one had ever mentioned the word perimenopause. I knew my mother had had a terrible time with her migraines and her weight gain, but 43? No, I don't think I really equated the changes in menstruation, the heavy flooding, and the fact that I couldn't sleep from somebody who'd been able to sleep 10 hours and a bomb could have gone off to suddenly being awake at 2 a.m. and being very unsure as to why and thinking it was all related to stress.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that we sometimes put that burden on ourselves to think that like something's wrong with us, you know, that we can't manage our stress, but we don't realize it's part of a bigger issue. It's part of bigger changes that are happening in our body that just happen to coincide with busyness at work and, you know, climbing that corporate ladder and things like that. You know, I think that it all happens at the same time, unfortunately, for many of us.
Yeah. And I think that's what puts the added strain on, doesn't it?
It certainly does. Because usually at that point in our lives, most of us in our career, no matter what you do, you know, at that point, we're kind of at the peak of our career. And also, you know, if you have children, sometimes you're dealing with, you know, your children, sometimes you're dealing with aging parents. So it's not only that, you have challenges at both home and with your career. And it's all kind of happening at the same time that our body is also going through these changes and our hormonal levels are changing.
And so to me, when I hear that, Dr. Kat, it very much suggests to me that women need a multifaceted approach as well to managing perimenopause.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that one of the things that is very important to talk about, you know, it's not just that you have X, Y, and Z symptoms and that you get hormone replacement therapy and that's the done deal and you're going to feel amazing and go back to normal. You know, we also have to take into the equation, you know, lifestyle changes. So, you know, really diet, nutrition, basically, you know, really focusing on ourselves. And I like to tell my patients that, you know, now is the time I want to give you permission to start being selfish, because it's not actually selfish. But I think as women, we do so much caring for everybody else and putting all of our energy outward. But in midlife, it's a perfect time for us to start really redirecting that energy inward and really focusing on ourselves and trying to optimize our health in every way to help us through that transition. So, you know, starting, you know, to incorporate movement every day into life. So, you know, any kind of exercise, and you don't have to be the perfect, you know, gym goer to do the perfect exercise routine, but it's even simple things like taking the stairs or parking further away from the door when you go to the grocery store. You know, little things like that, adding moments of movement every day into your life and eating whole foods and really focusing on the nutrition, is another big, big part of taking care of yourself during this time as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for some of us, that's bigger than we think it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. And sleep hygiene too. I mean, I certainly have been guilty of it. As an OBGYN, I have had disordered sleep for several decades. But in my 40s, it's all of a sudden, like I realized, wow, like I really need to focus on trying to optimize my sleep as much as possible. I mean, when my kids were really young, I would try to stay up late after they went to bed to get all these things done. And now it's like, you know, at the end of the evening, it's like, what is most important? The dishes are going to be there. The laundry is going to be there. That extra few dozen emails that you're going to check for work before you go to bed or something like that, they're going to be there tomorrow. But really trying to get a good, solid several hours of sleep to just try to help your body rejuvenate itself is so very important too.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that makes it feel also really doable when you say that, because then it doesn't, people don't think, oh my God, I've got to go 45 minutes to the gym and do HIIT, and I've got to, you know, change my whole diet, and I've got to, it feel, you know, I can feel, but when we talk about it in more normal terms, like taking the stairs and swapping something unhealthy for something healthier, suddenly we're like, oh, I could do this.
Yes. I mean, they have to be small but sustainable changes, because if you try to do full circle and try to just incorporate such complicated routines and complicated strict diets into your life, they're not sustainable. You can't keep going with that. You know, they have to be small changes that we incorporate into our lifestyle normally.
Yeah, some of us do crazy stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, I did Sarah Wilson. I quit sugar for, you know, cold turkey 6 weeks. It was, I mean, I still eat some sugar a little bit now, but you know, that sort of thing's a little crazy, but we can do that sometimes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I mean, you mentioned in there bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. That's clearly now come post the women's health debacle. Talk about how that's different and what
sure.
that entails, because I think it's always good to get that in a clear way.
Yeah. So bioidentical really just refers to the fact that the hormones that you're ingesting when they're bioidentical are identical chemically or molecularly to the hormones that your body is producing normally. So hormone replacement therapy has been around for a long time, but most of the traditional hormone replacement medications that you can get that are, you know, FDA approved in the United States are synthetic hormones. One of the most common ones that we know about and have probably heard about is called Premarin or Prempro. But the interesting thing is that Premarin, the name comes from pregnant mare's urine. So these are actually hormones derived from the urine of pregnant horses. They're not human hormones. So they're not bioidentical to our body, just for example. Whereas estradiol is the most prevalent hormone that we have in our body. And when you're taking an estradiol, and we have that in several forms, there's FDA approved forms of estradiol. There's also companies that do, you know, compounded estradiol and HRT as well. But that form of estrogen is identical to what your ovaries were creating when they were at their peak, you know, the estradiol itself. So that's basically the main difference is, you know, bioidentical refers to just being the same as what your body could produce on its own, whereas the other hormones can be synthetic forms. Another thing I think that's important to talk about, I think that many, many providers out there, when they have a patient come to them with symptoms of perimenopause or menopause seeking treatment, if they don't have the experience level with hormone replacement therapy itself, I see a lot of patients being put on birth control pills, especially low dose birth control pills. And this is absolutely the wrong answer, because they are made for a different purpose.
Yes.
You know, mainly birth control pills are synthetic hormones that are, the purpose is to suppress your body's own hormone production in order to suppress ovulation, to
yes.
prevent pregnancy.
Yes.
So it's not adding back anything that your body would normally produce. It's basically trying to suppress your body's own natural function. So some women might get a little bit of some symptom relief from birth control pills, but it's very limited because of the nature of the hormones that they're ingesting. So yeah. And in general, I think it's one of those things that it's a comfort level thing. So OBGYNs and primary care doctors have been prescribing birth control to patients for decades. It's what they're comfortable with. They have the most experience with. And so when asked to give hormones, they're like, yeah, I know this one. Let me give them this.
Yeah.
But it's not the best option. And it's actually, it can be more dangerous. We see actually more adverse effects and adverse events from birth control pills than we ever do from hormone replacement. Things like blood clots in the legs or the lungs, you know, exacerbating other medical problems, causing fatty liver, things like that. So, you know, when you compare them side by side, hormone replacement therapy generally is much lower dose because we're not actually trying to put you back in time and give you the peak hormones that you had at 30. We're just trying to give you back enough hormones to help to smooth out those symptoms and to help you kind of go through this transition a little easier. We're not trying to reverse time, whereas the birth control pills are a higher dose. And so that's the big difference there.
Yeah. And as you said, it's a completely different PEPs. And I think that's particularly common in the US. If I compare that to what I hear in Europe or Australia, that's not as common to do that. But it just, when you describe it like that, it's just so wrong. We're trying to suppress essentially the ovulatory process. And,
right.
And you have a very, obviously, as a result, a very light shedding at the end. We come off the contraceptive pill for a few days or whatever. You shed what little lining of the womb there is, and then you go back on it. Whereas bioidentical hormones are there to really, as you say, smooth us through the ride.
Right.
So estradiol is one, but the other side, of course, is progesterone. And there are different forms of progesterone, aren't there, which people may hear being talked about.
Yes. And so, I mean, there's synthetic forms of progesterone. Most of those are the progesterone forms that are in birth control pills, but also a lot of times, you know, providers will prescribe different forms of progesterone to try to help with like heavy periods. And so really, you know, it's not the same as your body's own natural progesterone. There's many different forms of progesterone that can be prescribed out there. But yeah, that's another thing too, is that, you know, there's bioidentical forms of progesterone and not bioidentical forms, more synthetic forms.
Yeah. So from your perspective, would you prefer women to have a more natural form of progesterone?
I think so. I think that, you know, when we're replacing a hormone and giving back a dose that is what the body was creating normally, I think that the body assimilates it better into its normal day-to-day function. Not only that, but then we also tend to be able to use lower doses to achieve the same goal. So when I give anybody a medication that's synthetic, it's almost like we have to, you know, reach higher doses before the body accepts it and starts to utilize it. And so in that way, I think that, you know, using the bioidentical forms is a smoother way for patients to get relief, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And then of course we do see women prescribed SSRIs, so antidepressants, very freely, a bit like birth control pills. Many primary care providers are familiar with SSRIs, and they may play a role for some women, but they're not really frontline medication.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we see that more often than not that, you know, when women come to us seeking HRT, most of them, I'd say probably 60% of them that I'm seeing come through our telemedicine platform are already on some form of SSRI because they've gone to a provider and complained about feeling like their mood swings are out of control, feeling like they are having trouble focusing. And immediately it's thought, well, maybe you have adult onset ADHD and they're put on ADHD medication, or they're told it's anxiety, you're depressed, let me give you an antidepressant. And so a lot of times they're coming to us already been on this medication for, you know, several months and not getting any relief. But really the problem is it's not neurotransmitters in the brain causing depression and anxiety. It's the loss of estrogen from all these tissues and the loss of estrogen in the brain that's causing a lot of these symptoms.
Yeah.
And so hormone replacement therapy actually does so much better to help with these symptoms than the SSRIs do.
Exactly. And of course, we're not just, it's not just estrogen in the brain, but of course it's the fact that estrogen is a precursor for serotonin, which is our happy hormone. And so
yes.
we're not producing enough serotonin in the body and we feel low. And so, yeah, you could say, oh, you're depressed. Well, we are, but we're not depressed because we're necessarily, I mean, we may be clinically depressed, but we're not necessarily clinically depressed in a classic sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I think that so many providers go to SSRIs, again, just because of their fear of hormones.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is not a great state. And then, of course, there's the one that gets a lot of people very hot under the collar, and that's testosterone. I mean, I get, you know, there are very, I feel that there's this very polarized camps about that, and people get quite quite concerned about testosterone. But I noticed that Winona, you prescribe DHEA, which is a yes. precursor of testosterone or can be.
Yes, well, mainly because via a telemedicine platform. So it's interesting. Testosterone is the only human hormone that's treated as a controlled substance. So in the United States, it is regulated and monitored as if it's a narcotic because it's been used as a performance enhancing drug. For, you know, for athletes, for bodybuilders. Mm. I actually have an experience. I was in the military for 12 years and the Army paid for my education. And we actually saw a huge problem with male soldiers abusing testosterone. And then I started to see it as an OBGYN because their wives were coming in being unable to get pregnant. And then we do an evaluation and we do a semen analysis on their husbands and realize that years of testosterone abuse had basically made his testes non-functional and he wasn't creating sperm. Yeah, it's crazy. But as a result, testosterone is very, very highly regulated. And so you really have to see an in-person provider to have testosterone prescribed. So that's why we use the DHEA instead of the testosterone because of that nature of the testosterone being a controlled substance. So, you know, the DHEA, when processed by our bodies, gets metabolized and broken down into testosterone and estrogen. And so it's a kind of a gentle way to, you know, gently increase testosterone levels for women. So.
And it has used, I think in some places, maybe also in the US, as a way to really help women with excess vaginal dryness. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Can be a very useful frontline medication there. Are you looking for balance, inner harmony, a sense of well-being without needing to resort to quick fixes or medication-only approaches? Well, you're not alone. Clear guidance on how to thrive through menopause is hard to come by and it's scattered all over the place. But my new book, Beyond Hormones, 7 Holistic Ways to Thrive Through Menopause, is a beacon for women. We're not just offering coping mechanisms, but practical pathways to manage perimenopause and menopause holistically. So if you're looking for a scientifically backed yet digestible guide to thriving through menopause, look no further. The book is available everywhere that you can buy books. We've kind of looked at these bioidentical hormones and you're prescribing them for physical symptoms. How do you see that also as a preventative medication route?
Well, I think, you know, really when it comes to our aging as women, you know, the benefits of HRT are so great for the wellness of our body. So, you know, the cardioprotective effects of it, also in risk reduction for osteoporosis, you know, just keeping our bone health. So, you know, we don't put patients on HRT solely for prevention. You know, generally we want to treat symptoms, but these are the added side benefits that we get. And also now we know, you know, with more and more research that's coming out as well, that women on HRT have a lower risk of developing dementia and Alzheimer's long term. Mm-hmm. So there's just so many. The way I describe it to patients is that, you know, estrogen and progesterone are so beneficial. There's so many tissues in our body, and that when it's depleted, we are at risk for all these things, these other things that happen. So adding the estrogen, especially back in the HRT, you know, can really give them a lot of preventive measures against these, you know, problems that can happen.
Yeah. You know, and that's preventative when they're taking the medication.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, especially, you know, women come in, many of them, when they're starting this journey and they're considering HRT, I think that most women are very afraid of the risk of breast cancer. They've heard so many things in the press and in the media, and they've, you know, read things on their own. And when you go and you search HRT on the internet, that's what you'll see: risk of blood clot, risk of breast cancer. But actually what women don't recognize is that the leading killer of women in midlife and after is actually not breast cancer. It's actually heart disease. So if estrogen is cardioprotective, then by taking HRT, you're actually reducing your risk of a heart disease related event. Yeah.
And it works, doesn't it, by doing things like lowering cholesterol levels?
Yes. And improving the health of the vessels too. And, you know, in the basically the blood delivery as well. You know, the tissues themselves tend to be stronger, more elastic. And so you have less risk of, you know, coronary artery disease as well.
Yeah. And I think that is also something that I think many clinicians who are outside of OBGYN don't understand. This is an ongoing conversation between myself and my clinician. And I said to him, I don't need to improve my diet. You're not taking in the fact that I'm a postmenopausal woman. And I've not been on HRT because I was never offered it before it was too late to be sort of widely available. But, you know, and I've obviously, through a lot of diet and exercise, brought my cholesterol round. But I said to him, it's not solely related to that. You're missing a major piece.
Yes, it is a major piece. Mm. Absolutely.
And so I wonder how many women are being pushed into quite difficult to manage diets and pushing their exercise regime. And it's good to eat well and it's good to move, but we're not getting the message across. As you said, we're not getting the message across about the pill and SSRIs. I don't think we're getting across the message that sometimes women are being, to a certain extent, ashamed for things like that. And yes, it isn't actually anything that they're doing. It's the fact that they're postmenopausal.
Right. And their body composition is changing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So there is another way, which is not another, which is not another blood pressure medication. Might be a easier way.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
But Dr. Kat, so a patient wants to seek a doctor. They may come to you at Winona, or they come to you, or they go to another provider. What are the things that they need to look for in a provider, and what are the red flags?
Sure. So I think that the most important thing is that you feel like your concerns are being listened to. You know, I think it's important for any patient, no matter where they seek care, that they feel seen and heard. I think that it's a red flag if you start to discuss symptoms and you're dismissed right off the bat. I think I've heard too many times, I've heard women say, well, they've gone to a provider and they've talked about what they're feeling, what they're experiencing, and they're told, well, it's normal. This is a part of living. You're just going to have to deal with it. You know? So, you know, it's a huge disparity, because if anybody went to the physician and went to a physician and said, you know, for any other symptoms, you know, maybe if they have a thyroid disorder, if they have diabetes, I'm having trouble keeping my blood sugar under control. We would never say, well, you know, you're just a glutton and you need to eat better, like, or this is a normal part of life. We would give them treatment. And I think that the important part is that you feel seen and heard, and that your concerns and your symptoms are recognized as an actual medical issue. Because if your symptoms are bothersome enough to your day-to-day life, to the point where they're interfering with your career and just your normal day-to-day activities, then they're serious enough to warrant treatment. And so I think that you want to make sure that you're taken seriously. Also, the other thing is the red flag, I think, is the birth control pill being given right off the bat. Yeah. You know, that would be another thing. And so I think that that's important for women to understand, is that, you know, it really isn't safe for women to continue on birth control pills after the age of 50. There's no reason for them to be on it. And so if you're of that age or older and complaining about symptoms and that's what's offered to you, don't be afraid to question it.
Yeah.
The other thing too, is I think when you're seeing a physician and you have questions about anything they're offering, if a physician takes offense or gets defensive, that's a big red flag.
Yes.
None of us should ever be, upset or take offense if a patient wants a second opinion or wants to have answers, because to me, I want my patients to be as educated as possible.
Yeah.
And so, knowledge is power, and really the more that they understand about what's going on with their body, it helps me to have that conversation with them. It helps us to come together with some shared decision-making and to really find out what is the best treatment for them. Because I only talk to them a certain period of time. They're with their body every day. And so they're really the experts on how they're feeling. And if your provider doesn't see that as such and doesn't recognize that you really know what's going on, or they belittle or dismiss your symptoms, that's concerning. So you want to make sure that you don't, sit back and take that. I think that far too often, I think patients feel like they are kind of stuck with a provider once they've developed a relationship, but you have every right to see somebody else and to try to find somebody that you really feel comfortable with and that you feel listens to you. I think that's very important.
Yeah. And I think given how important getting the right care at this time of life is, not just because symptoms are unpleasant and potentially, troublesome to live with, but because, as you mentioned, this is also, underlying cardiovascular osteoporosis and even later down the line, potentially dementia-related disorders. It isn't just a case of accepting it and being sent away or not giving adequate treatment, because it has further ramifications.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think that's that. And I think, navigating this world is quite complicated. I mean, beyond the medical world, I think there's a lot of noise on the internet that feels like everybody's saying something. What's your best advice to my listeners who think, oh, there's menopause everywhere, but I'm really confused? Where do they go?
Well, I think that it's important to recognize where you're getting your information. There are many physicians online now that are really using social media as a platform to educate. But I think it's important that you consider your sources, right? So if you run a Google search for anything, pay attention to where the information is coming from. Yeah. Try not to get your information from blog sites or from opinion sites. If you get a group of women together and they're in a Facebook group, you're going to hear from the people that are very happy and you're going to hear from the people that are not so happy. But the majority of the women in the middle, you're not going to get the information. But there's some good solid resources. The North American Menopause Society has a lot of good resources for women on their website that are free. Also, our College of OBGYN has information if you like need to learn about menopause. But also, we realize that there's a huge gap in actual real scientific information and peer-reviewed information. So we actually have some information that's free and available to women on our website on Winona. So on buywinona.com, we have some medical journal articles that have been written by our physicians, information just to learn about, the phases of menopause, how to recognize perimenopause. And just, I think the most important thing is just to try to educate yourself. And, I think that we have to get the word out to younger women on what to expect, after the 30s, so that it's not suddenly a surprise, I think that, you have to really value like what and where you're getting your information from. But I think a lot of the doctors that are out there on social media are putting out some really great educational material for patients now too.
Yeah, increasingly so. And I think that there are a number in each country that people can tap into who feel like they're giving from a non-profit type minded approach as well. That it's education. I think that's very important. They often notice they have a very balanced view that they recognize, as you said, really at the start of our conversation, that diet and movement and sleep and all these factors are also important. Mm-hmm. And we're not saying it's hormones or bust, you know. Similarly, we're not going around saying hormone free for everybody. I mean, some people may choose to go that route. Lots of women are fine and say, I don't want to, and that's their choice.
Right.
I think that we're not taking polarized sides, but actually sharing middle ground information that is well sourced and researched.
Yes. And I would be weary of, you know, there's some companies out there now that, of course, have gotten Hollywood stars to to sponsor and to represent them. And, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't want to take medical advice from Oprah or Drew Barrymore or, you know, anybody else.
They're
wonderful at acting and having their talk shows, but they're not the resource that you want to listen to when it comes to getting advice on your health care.
No, they're getting paid to say what the company wants them to say.
Exactly.
And they're not qualified to have that conversation any more than someone like myself, who may have other scientific understanding and background, but I'm not qualified to talk about hormone therapy or issues on pelvic floors. And that's why people like yourself come on the show, because you're experts in your field. And then it's coming from a reputable source, and that's really important to me too.
Yeah, and I think that patients should recognize that too. Yeah, reputable sources only.
So you mentioned your Winona website. Dr. Kat, how can people go to the site? If they're in the North America, obviously, maybe find a provider if they're looking for a provider. But if we're in general, to get some of the resources that you've placed there for free.
Sure. So the website is bywinona.com. And you can, if you're interested in exploring treatment, there is an online adaptive questionnaire where you put in your name and you put in your state, and we'll let you know if we're available in your state. But if not, there's a lot of online resources on the website, articles that you can read. We also do webinars monthly as well that are free for patients. We actually have one this evening. So if you have questions or if you just wanted to listen in, we basically take live questions from patients and just have a conversation and talk about the answers. It's generally me and our chief medical officer, Dr. Green, we just have an open conversation and we have someone that reads the questions for us. But it's great because it's a way for women to get answers real time.
Yeah.
And also I think that, you know, because we're a telemedicine platform, I've had some patients think that I'm a robot. But it's nice because then on the webinar, they see that, no, I'm actually a real person. You know, I'm a real person with a real life. And every once in a while in the webinar, you might hear like one of my children run by in the background, or, you know, we're real people just trying to do the best we can to help patients. And then I also have an Instagram account that they have encouraged me to do, a professional Instagram. So where I share some information on there as well. And that's Dr. Kat, OBGYN. So that's available as well. We try to share educational information on the Winona social pages too. They have a TikTok account and Instagram, and there's a Winona Facebook group for women. So Winona women's group too. So there's a lot of information out there for patients.
That's really, really good. And obviously we will share that in the show notes. Dr. Kat, I want to thank you for coming on and giving a really clear and balanced view of menopause, where biohormonal replacement therapy fits in here, and also I think some of the things that we should be watching out for
absolutely
when we go to our doctors, and we may not feel that we're quite being heard or we're being pushed into something that doesn't feel quite right. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Well, I hope you gained value from that conversation. I know I did. There were just some really key facts throughout it that Dr. Kat gave us. And if you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. Next week, I'll be talking to Junie Moon about why women self-sabotage themselves and how we can do the shadow work we need in order to be able to live the second half of our life post-menopause to its fullest. So join me. Until next time, go well.